This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. Today's host is Kelly McLean.
My guest today is Jill Schock. Jill, also known as the Death Doula LA, is a doula for the dying. So just like a doula for birth ushers souls and beings into this world, Jill helps usher them out. She received a master's degree in ethics and theology from Vanderbilt University and was trained and certified as a clinical chaplain or spiritual counselor. She is a spiritual but not necessarily religious multi-faith minister who specially tends to those facing end of life. She also is a good friend of the When You Die site, and she happens to be my neighbor. This past weekend, Jill and I together attended the Death Salon. This is the premier hub family reunion for open forum gathering place for the death positive movement. Death positive meaning attempting to take the shame and taboo out of death and restore it to its natural place as a sacred part of the circle of life. So we attended the conference and we thought we would sit down and share with anyone who's interested what actually happened at the Death Salon. We talked about all kinds of issues from green burial to pet death, so much interesting stuff we thought we had to share. So in this podcast, Jill and I sit down and review what happened at the Death Salon this past weekend in Seattle. Enjoy. I feel a little bit wrecked from our incredible and exhausting weekend, and we've been joking that we have a death salon hangover.
We definitely do.
We're both like no makeup, moving slowly.
That's right.
We were going to do this podcast in the morning. It's 5:45 p.m.
Yeah.
But here we are. And
we're back.
We're back, and we just wanted to share with anyone out there who's curious and the When You Die listeners about the Death Salon, because it's really the premier gathering of people in the hashtag death positive movement, and I would argue even in the death and dying world, period. What do you think?
I think it's the most progressive group looking at, you know, the field of death and dying on several aspects. So I think anyone who looks at the future of the industry should be looking at Death Salon.
Yeah, and can you say something about Caitlin Doty and Megan Rosenbloom, who actually was our first or second podcast guest? But
that's right.
Who is the Death Salon and who's behind it?
So Megan Rosenbloom and Caitlin Doty co-founded the Death Salon. And essentially, Megan puts together this huge event where they have several panelists speak about, you know, their contribution to this field and sort of what it looks like. And so, you know, I give them credit for coming together and really putting an event like this on, because it's a whole weekend event and a lot of people traveled to be there.
Yeah, when they asked, okay, who's from Seattle, you know, maybe 12% raised their hands. Most people were like us, a lot of people from Los Angeles.
And even one woman from Australia who we got the pleasure. Dork.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's going to be on the podcast next, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that people travel far and wide to do, because it's actually kind of rare to have a community of people
exactly.
who are comfortable talking about death, who are curious, and who want to take time out of life to talk about death.
Yes. Yeah.
I think the idea of the Death Salon is, it's based on, there were death salons in, you know, up until the 1800s, I think,
mm-hmm.
where they would just gather and hold conversations about it. And some of it was mm-hmm. medical and some of it was more academic.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the same.
Yeah, it touched on all those things, medical, academic, the funeral industry, you know, the law, which has a huge part to do with everything.
The environment.
Grief as well was brought into this one. So it had an art was a huge part of it. And that's probably where we should start, because that
yeah.
was one of the greatest parts of the weekend.
Oh, we both fell in love with Silent James at Silent James Live, this quirkily dressed young man. There were bats on his pants, I recall.
And he had a wonderful Grace Jones jacket.
Great fashion. And
radical bow ties.
Radical bow ties every day, suspenders. And this young man was live illustrating the entire event. So I don't know how his hand didn't fall off. Every single event he was drawing, doing cartoons, and they're very almost like Quentin Blake, who illustrates for Roald Dahl. They're very silly, and at the same time, they're beautiful.
And very informative. And he also did the Death Salon logo this year. So if you check that out, it's a pretty cool skull with the...
Space needle as the nose. Yeah,
it's pretty rad. So we'll post all the pictures that we took of these boards. He did some digital, and he did some on real boards, and we took pictures of those. So you guys can check those out. And they're actually a great summary of every speaker, sort of put together in this one beautiful visual representation. So, Silent James, we love you, and we will work with you again soon.
Absolutely. And so you can see those on the @whenyoudie_org, which is our Instagram, and we'll post them on the site as well. But it was really interesting because there was a theme of art overall, and I think it was... You know, a picture's worth a thousand words. Death is hard to talk about. Art is one way that draws us out and makes it so that we have, you know, a point of reference to it. It's a great way to start the conversation.
Absolutely.
That no one is having.
It's so visual. And another thing that struck me about some of the art that was there, I was actually able to meet and befriend a Victorian hair artist.
Oh, we also fell in love with her?
Yes. Amazing young woman who was a historian of the Victorian era and preserving those traditions. And it's actually quite beautiful.
Yeah. Great Victorian hair artist, Courtney.
Mm-hmm. And then also there were people interested in sort of the theatrical aspect of grief and what that looks like.
Yeah, so they really started, they understand this principle and started the whole thing off by having a grief theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was just, the writer of the whole thing says that people get really uncomfortable when she brings up death, but when... she wrote the play, then people started approaching her and saying, you know, that happened to me, or that didn't happen to me, and I wish it had.
Right.
And so that's kind of her inspiration there. So that was one of the themes of the weekend, we think, was just art and the important place and unique role it plays in the conversation. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Art was definitely in the air around it. And then, of course, one of the first topics that we had to absolutely address was death and the maiden.
It was kind of the elephant in the room because there were very few men in the room.
And only three male presenters.
Not a great place to pick up guys.
No, absolutely not.
Great place to meet chicks with dark hair
and bangs. They have a theme going, but the wonderful Sarah Chavez, who is in the Order of the Good Death, did a great presentation on death and the maiden, you know, which really talked about why women are in death. And her view was so great because, of course, everyone would say, well, women are naturally drawn to nurture and you know, and she was sort of making the argument, you know, no, this is our profession and this is, we do it because we care, not because of some sexualized quality.
Right. And it's not because we're docile so that we're easy to be around when it's a tough time.
Right.
And that we make good chicken soup, but actually because it comes from a place of strength.
Yes.
You know, and I would argue this didn't come up, but who brings people into this world? Women.
Yeah.
Jill is actually much more freaked out by the birth process than the death process.
And a lot of people think pregnancy is beautiful. It scares the shit out of me. So.
Yeah, it's not for sissies at all.
It's really
not. And who goes there? Women. And
right.
It makes sense then that on the other end, women would be particularly capable of meeting that powerful moment.
Mm-hmm.
So Death and the Maiden was an important conversation starter because it was really, it really is mostly women in the industry, which...
It is, which is powerful. And women have power.
Yeah, and Sarah was making the comment, look,
this is not a new thing. People are kind of thinking, oh, women are really getting into this. Mm-hmm. But actually, no, traditionally, it has tended to be a female role.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. And at the same time, I hope that we, next year at the Death Salon, I hope we see more male faces, because it's really,
me too.
I hear men also die.
Yeah, and the men who were there were absolutely incredible, and we need more men, you know, with us to help. So, and you know, there actually we got to also hear a panel of writers, who were death writers, and you know, Kelly as a writer got to have a great connection with them. But one of them
I dorked out on that.
She really did.
You were like, not as I was really overwhelmed.
But you know, one of the writers had mentioned that someone had once said to her, you know, what's a nice girl like you writing about all this grim stuff?
What's a nice girl like you doing writing
about
this?
What is a nice girl anyway? I'm not quite sure.
Not us. Not in this room.
Yeah,
and that was a theme, and they said they've gotten that from editors and talked about the challenges of death writing in general, and a lot of times what they're told is, oh, no one wants to hear about that, sweetheart. No one wants to think about it. That's not pleasant. But interestingly, right now, there are more and more pieces that are going there, and that are not, and there are more writers that are not afraid to have an open conversation, and
women
they're
writers.
Mostly women. So it's interesting that this death positive movement is largely fueled by women.
Yeah,
it's great. Largely with dark hair and bangs.
Yes.
So what else struck you?
Well, I think one of the most practical pieces of this death salon was Chanel Reynolds talking about her GYST. GYST. Get your shit together.
GYST.com, I think, is the website. And it's literally that. Guess what? We're all going to die. If there's one thing we all have in common, it's death. Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Because her husband and she did not have their shit together when he suddenly died in a car accident, leaving his daughter and their son. And so here she is, suddenly a widow, suddenly a single mother, suddenly a single stepmother, and
her shit wasn't together.
No, and it was to some extent, but it really wasn't to another extent. And so it has become her passion to help people get things in order. And this was striking for me because, as I told you, Jill, I don't have a secret fund laying around that I have to distribute to various loved ones. Like, everything will go to my husband, and that's great. I'm fine. Like, my car's, you know, you can have my car. I don't give a shit. Like, I care about Luna. And, but her argument was, okay, well, what would you want to say? Is there something you need to say to someone before this happens? You know,
and financial protection.
Is there a note you want to leave? Is there financial protection? Mm-hmm. Should you have life insurance? Do you have a DNR?
Yeah. What are your end of life wishes? You know, what if you are on a vent and you know someone needs to pull you off that? So, I think a lot of women came up and were asking questions about, well, me and my husband. So it really hit on sort of that familial point where, you know, death, when it impacts families, hits them in a number of different ways, financially and otherwise. So go to that website if you want to know all the comprehensive steps to take to have your shit together if and when something happens to you.
Yep. And I think it was powerful for me because she really made the point. It doesn't matter, young or old, rich or poor, you need to think about this moment and make friends with the fact that it could come. Probably not going to come right away.
Yeah.
But it will eventually. And
you just never know.
You just have to have it in order. And something that struck me about that is that it's actually quite relieving to do those things. Probably in the back of my mind, I would have a real peace of mind if I knew, oh, I had left a letter.
Yes.
For my loved ones
and
or whatever.
And that's beautiful. See,
you
it's
don't
not
have to
just
worry.
The ticky-tacky logistics.
Right.
It's also, I want a letter. You were saying I would leave my husband a letter. And that, how beautiful is that? You know he would fall to pieces reading it, too.
Yeah. So. Actually, on the plane home, and we may or may not have had a post-death salon cocktail or two.
We did.
On the plane. But I actually wrote a little note in my phone that was like, "Dear James, if I die, I love you."
I love it. And I also wore my, we came home on 9/11 and I was wearing my Future Corpse shirt on the plane. The stewardess was real wide-eyed.
Not cool, man. Jill did not think about this. They were selling them at the conference. It's awesome. And then yeah. It's 9/11. So everyone's probably a little more nervous to fly on that particular day. And in walks Jill. Future Corpse. Everyone's like, oh, there's the good omen I was looking for.
Exactly.
Thank you. But clearly we made it, so.
Yes, exactly.
Little humorous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, they get your shit together, and then, you know, that kind of linked towards Death with Dignity, which is obviously, you know, we live in California here, but Washington and Oregon have been dealing with this program for a little bit longer, and it's pretty solid up there.
Yeah, so we had a couple of women that were very involved with the Death with Dignity.
Mm.
I forget the name of that organization. Do you remember?
It came out of Compassionate Choices. Compassion and Choices.
Okay.
So I think Compassionate Choices became Compassion and Choices. They sort of, there was a merge there, I believe.
Okay, that's
great.
So,
you know.
Yeah, so they really have been very involved. I think they said of the whatever number of 100 and some death with dignities that happened, they were involved with, you know, the majority of them.
Yeah, and that's just, it's an incredible movement because it gives power to us. You know, if we are in a situation where, you know, it's terminal and our days are limited and we're truly suffering, just having that medication as an option is a huge relief. And I think every patient has a right to that. You know, I think something that really pushes my buttons about this topic is that one of the biggest, I don't know, haters, if you will, or someone who, people who lobby against death with dignity, no surprise, is the Catholic Church, and they
Which
have.
I did not know. That makes sense.
It makes total sense. They do like to, you know, feel as though they have control over other people's bodies, and I feel like a bit of the irony is that you would think a church wouldn't want people to suffer, but they're against this bill, and to my knowledge, they've thrown over $8 million to get it shut down in as many places as they can. But Left
Which
Coast...
That's why it's so significant.
It is very
because
significant.
Because they have the money. So that's a very difficult opponent to take on when they have an unlimitedly deep pocket,
right.
Seemingly.
Exactly. And this is not the first thing we know as women that they've thrown money at to get rid of. So it's disappointing, and I would hope that, you know, there's a change somewhere down the line.
Right. And it's kind of has to do with a shift in view.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably a lot of the people in the Catholic Church that oppose death with dignity are coming from a good place in their hearts. But if you really get educated about what it means, and we call it assisted suicide, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people say that, and that's actually,
you know,
horrible.
What? Yeah, that's really bad. In fact, we will put on one of the boards that Silent James so drew, you know, one of the points that he had on there is that we need to get rid of the S word. This is not suicide. No matter what you were told, these people are dying, and they need assistance with that because it's truly a suffering thing. I think a lot of the opinions that are rough about it come from just ignorance, as any opinion.
Absolutely. And I even, you know, once used the term assisted suicide and you were like, hey, because I didn't
That's
know.
Right.
That's just how I've heard it spoken about.
And you know,
it was my own ignorance.
The Los Angeles Times just recently posted an article and used the term assisted suicide, and I made the mistake of commenting in their Facebook feed, and I was met with a barrage of Catholics telling me to wake up and call it what it is.
Wow. And it's just, you know, she made the point, not one of these people that I've met would not choose to not go on living.
Right.
But they're not going to go on living.
Exactly.
So it's a question of, also it's a question of taking it back into your own hands. And, you know, there's nothing more that makes you more powerless than death, right?
Right.
So feeling like there's some choice in how you do it and when and who's there.
And not everybody
takes
it. And
how long
you are
in extreme pain. And not, yeah, actually that was an interesting fact that came out is that most people that get the pill,
yeah,
don't actually end up taking it, but just having it is a comfort in that really difficult space.
Right. The cancer does not own them. They choose when the cancer is done.
Well said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we can close Death with Dignity on that one. Yeah. But it was a great topic, you know, and it's pretty popular right now. So all you really need to do is Google Death with Dignity or Aid in Dying, which we have in California. And there's going to be a ton of information on that out there. So,
mm-hmm.
So one of the most, I'm not sure, I don't want to say controversial, but definitely one of the most thought-provoking presentations for me came from a woman named Angela Hennessy. She's a professor in Oakland, and she really focused on the meaning of the black body and sort of rituals. It's hard to sort of sum up what she said, but when she went to a conference where, you know, it was a death conference or something, and people were repeating, like, I am going to die, you know, just sort of trying to drill that into their head and whatever. And she was saying, you know, as a black woman in America, I already know that I'm going to die. And so many parallels were, you know.
Chilling.
It was. I have goosebumps right now.
And it's, let me tell you, it is not cool in this office.
Yeah, it's warm in here today. But, I mean, drawing, you know, lines to lyrics of, you know, artists like Tupac Shakur and poets and, you know, what's a black life worth and, you know, how they're less likely to seek out help, you know, to go to medical institutions and, you know, be a part of these traditions that, you know, us white folks are, you know, doing already.
Yeah, and she also is a victim of gun violence, which
she speaks
about very openly. She was shot.
In 2015.
On her doorstep.
Yeah.
Kind of randomly.
I'm not sure what the story behind it is, that's just...
She's a victim of gun violence, so she's just, you know, very... And she was, I think, already talking about this kind of stuff, but this is... very personal matter
it
for
is
her,
personal.
And she was very generous in her openness around it. And as a white girl, it was very eye opening.
Right, and you know, many people there were white. You know, we have to address that. And so, one of the things that was brought up is how can we be more inclusive and now, you know, spread traditions, you know, for other communities that aren't. You know,
I mean, it really was like largely white skin, black hair, bangs,
white
vagina,
educated women,
and you know what? And that's great. That's a great starting place.
Yeah.
Sure. But one of the big themes of this conference also was it is all of our desire and intention to spread this conversation beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What other communities need, not just us.
Yeah.
So it's a topic that got brought up and it's very important. And I just keep thinking about it more and more. So thank you, Angela Hennessy, for that wonderful, wonderful presentation. And so now we can touch upon like two of the themes that were.
This is the aww portion of this podcast.
Big, I would say. There were two huge themes here this year at Death Salon, one of which is pet death. Okay,
I have
so
my little puppy curled up on my lap right now, and
Kelly
it just,
has a dog
you saying
in her
that
lap.
Is just very sad.
And
it was very palpably very sad, and oddly, we talked about all kinds of things around death, but it wasn't until the pet death that people were like grunting and
As soon as Caitlin showed, so Caitlin Doty did this presentation about postmortem pets. And,
which I thought was significant because she is the poster girl for the whole thing.
Right.
So whatever she chooses, she's kind of the keynote. So what she chooses as her topic, I think, is the unofficial theme of the entire thing. And it actually felt that way with the pet death.
It did. And I thought her coming from a very personal place, you know, she did the whole presentation about putting her own cat, the Meow, down in her own home, and then offering...
She photo documented the whole thing,
she
shared those.
She really did. I think what was, you know, so shocking to me is she actually had a photo of when the vet put, you know, the needle into the Meow's body, you know, so that's...
And it was very interesting. I think one of the main takeaways for me was she had the vet come to her home. She said it costs a little bit more, but not a ton.
I have done that service, and it's worth it. It is worth it. because the pet doesn't get disturbed. They don't even know what's
how
coming.
How freaked out they get when they go to the vet. Like, exactly. That's not the way that they want to go out. However, if they're curled up in your lap and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she... The meow was, you know, gracefully let go.
Bye, the meow.
Bye, meow. And, you know, Caitlin, in true Caitlin fashion, had a whole green funeral for her cat. But she did have the cat at her house for a few days, didn't she? She said she, like, put the meow on ice, and the meow had, like, gotten all wet or something.
So the ice was melting a little, and the meow got all wet.
And she had to, she told this funny little vignette of her blow-drying her dead cat on her living room floor. Yeah. And this is real. You know, these are things that happen, you know, during death and dying. It's not perfect. Not even Caitlin Doughty can pull off the perfect green funeral for her pet.
Yeah.
You know? But it was a beautiful thing. The meow got married in the Santa Monica Mountains. And Caitlin said... Buried. Yeah. Green buried. And Caitlin said it truly gave her closure with her pet.
Yeah, and she said she needed those few days at home. She needed to bury... You know, they dug the grave. There's something very connected to it, which was a theme. But interestingly, that also did echo the death with dignity conversation, because do you think the people that spend, that put millions or advocate for putting millions toward not, you're shaking your head. I feel like you know what I'm going to say. Do you think the people that put millions toward opposing death with dignity when their dog is suffering, do you think that they put them down?
I don't know. I do.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no one likes to see their animal suffer, and it makes sense.
I don't know. Yeah.
But it was interesting to then freely talk about, oh, yeah, well, of course there's no problem with pets. It doesn't matter what state your puppy's in. If they get old and they get really sick, you can make the choice. They're allowed to die before the, you know, excruciating, long, drawn-out thing.
Right.
And so actually it was... Talking about pet death highlighted the fact that pets actually have more choices and freedom, or we have more choices and freedom with our pets than with our, you know, elderly parents.
And that's actually completely true.
Because it's less regulated.
Even death with dignity cannot help Alzheimer's patients, because you have to be consciously aware when you take your own medication. No one's actually giving it to you. So, yeah, there are strong parallels, and we, in a way, you know, our pets get a lot better treatment at end of life, you know, because we so love them, and that's why the whole room was so emotional.
Oh, it was really quite funny. And she ended on this note where she said, so don't worry if your pet, if you think your pet funeral was too human. Worry that your, you know, human funeral should be more pet-like,
yes,
because of their freedoms. And that kind of segued into later that night there was a cocktail party.
Quote-unquote cocktail party.
Yeah, okay. We loved the death salon, but we have to call it out. Cocktail party was a little bit BS.
It was.
Because there was we only got one tiny glass of wine, and then it was just more lectures. And you know what? They were both great.
The lectures were wonderful, but if you say you're going to have a party, we went there with the intention of finally getting to mingle a little bit.
Chat with people, have a few
enjoy
drinks
and
snacks.
And
have a celebratory moment in what was frankly a heavy weekend.
It was a very heavy weekend. So putting more lectures, even though the lecturist, Paul, was wonderful.
Dr. Paul, yeah.
He was fabulous. He was fabulous. I would recommend looking him up. We'll put some of that information out on the website and stuff. So we had a great talk about sort of how sacred pets are to us, and he had done a lot of research on sort of rogue pet cemeteries and how people...
He's a weirdo he's a big-time wonderful weirdo.
A wonderful weirdo,
he
yes.
He had like if a rat tail was on your chin twice, that thing beard.
He had a huge purple Victorian top hat.
Long hair.
Just a wonderful speaker and a great vibe. You can't miss him. You really can't.
And he's spent a lot of his time, he's traveled all over the world to pet cemeteries.
Yeah.
And he says he finds them so much more fascinating because what people write on their pet graves are so meaningful. He told us some great stories about different you know.
I love the dog that used to go to the bar. That was a great one.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, that was just so special.
He talked about dogs that, you know, we almost got military. They got full
military
burials because they were bomb-sniffing dogs or they had saved many lives. And
yeah.
Really
yeah.
incredible
there's,
stories.
There's actually a military dog cemetery.
Who knew?
And I think the most precious ones, and this is something I would totally do, but were the people who found dead animals on the side of the road and buried them. And I think one of the markers that we saw that says, here lies a dog who died and buried by people who cared. So
oh,
we care
so
about
sweet.
Animals, whether they are ours or not.
Well
and,
said.
Yeah. And it was just a strong theme. And I think, yeah. you know, like in animals, when the dog dies, everyone's like, no! And the human can be brutally murdered.
Yeah.
And we're like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, dude, bring yeah. on more.
Yeah, where the red fern grows, I'm traumatized by that, but I just saw it last week, and I'm fine.
No problem.
I'm
yeah,
fine.
So that was one of the interesting themes was like, oh, well, how is it different with pets, and
yeah.
why do they hold this special place in our hearts, this nonverbal relationship, which he said is very irrational,
mm-hmm.
but incredibly meaningful. So that was a sweet exploration, and before that we had a presentation by two sisters, two beautiful young ladies who run up a business of aquamation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jill, what is aquamation? I had never heard of it.
So we know what cremation is,
yep.
and we know that that is the, you know, getting rid of the body by use of fire. Aquamation actually uses water to do the same process. And it's a lot better for the environment. So, you know, keeping with the green theme here,
I'm going to pause you for one sec.
Sure.
And we're live.
Woohoo.
Yeah, so you were saying pet
yeah.
cremate. So cremation
okay.
is by fire.
Right. So aquamation is a process that uses water. And these sisters came together. They had both had previous careers. They started this because they wanted this option for their pet. And it's also a green option.
And nobody had it, so they kind of decided to do
nobody
it themselves.
Nobody had it. They bought the equipment, they found a facility, and they rule. These two sisters are really wonderful. I saw them all over the conference all weekend. They were working on their phones. You know, you could tell these girls are really into it. So you can see how pets, once again, are leading the way in greener options
mm-hmm.
for burial.
Yeah, so aquamation is a greener option.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really think about it, but with cremation, there's quite a lot of pollution there. And
exactly.
I actually have always planned on being cremated, and it wasn't until this weekend that I have not made any decisions, but I'm sort of rethinking it because I don't like the idea that my final act would be a middle finger to the environment.
Earth. I don't either.
I would much rather,
I don't
you
either.
Know, just become a part of it.
And the numbers on cremation are so high as 98% in the local region of Seattle of where we were. That's a lot of cremation,
wow.
you know, and yeah, we've got to find a greener way to do this. And
well, there's also the issue that we're running out of space.
Oh,
so
we,
in
yeah.
Japan, they have run out of space because obviously it's not a big island and they've been burying people for a long time.
Yeah, we need better options.
And it's literally full. And
mm-hmm.
same with the UK. The UK is on its way as well to being
that's true.
No room.
Even here locally at Hollywood Forever, they said they've got about 50 years of space left. So
and a lot of celebrities
in
that
our
want
lifetime,
to be there.
In our lifetime, the funeral industry will drastically change legally and otherwise. Actually, the way that it's set up, you know, how the finances and the legality works is actually not conducive to the progress of the funeral industry. So there needs to be an actual break somewhere. And there was this wonderful woman named Tanya who had some
she's
legal
a lawyer.
Breakdown.
She's like the death law lady.
And we need this death law lady because she's going to be the one to help us find the loopholes that we need to, make progress. So there's a lot of legal involved. It scared me a little bit how much that could potentially hold back the industry. So there's a lot of work to be done. Instead of going the way
yeah,
that...
It's quite limited. And
yeah.
it's an interesting reflection of the fact that we have so much fear around death in our society that we really get very uptight around options with death. Mm-hmm. I get it. It makes a lot of sense. But at this point, the law book reads is very anachronistic and it's it no longer applies.
It doesn't apply.
Frankly, the environment is a big question.
Yeah, it doesn't apply.
Like the amount of smoke that happens from one cremation, that's actually a lot of toxins being released. And if we're all doing that, then it's all of our problem.
Yeah,
it's matter that you drove a Prius. You know?
Right, exactly.
It does.
Your Prius is not going to make up for it. So, and it was, you know, that was really, you know, from pets to, you know, did the aquamation and then just looking at the options. But, you know, pets was a huge theme. And in fact, we were lucky enough to be graced by the present of Kermit, the grief dog.
Kermit the dog here. So cute.
I love him so much.
It's a little weird. Jill has talked about him a lot.
I took pictures with him. Yeah. They're on my Instagram.
She would periodically disappear and I would find her petting Kermit the dog.
I followed him a lot.
He's a really cute dog and he's a grief pal.
That's right. His owner, Melissa.
He's a counselor.
Ms. Owner Melissa is a green burial mortician in Texas, and Kermit is the first grief dog that Texas has ever had, official grief dog. He's a death-positive pup. He has his own Instagram.
Hashtag Kermit the dog.
Hashtag Kermit the dog, and you will be able to find him in all his adorableness there.
Yeah.
He was very great.
And he was a nice pal for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
During the weekend, and it was just kind of very nicely in line with the theme of the relationship with animals and death,
right,
and the special relationship between humans and animals. But the pet thing was also, I thought, a reflection of the green burial, which was maybe if we had to give one theme to the weekend, so many that we've talked about, but if we had to pick one, green burial.
Green burial. And this is, oh my God. Of course, it's the most beautiful idea. I'm a huge proponent of it. You know, Death Doula LA definitely supports green burial.
Can you tell us what green burial is? Because some people have never even heard of it.
Yeah. So green burial is really, you know, a practice to where you're putting your plain body back into the earth.
That's so freakish. I mean, that's so out there that you would just die in the earth.
Right.
I mean, it's the most natural. Strange that we've gone so far from it. It's not even legal to just do that.
Right. You can't just bury people anywhere. These green burial places have to have sanctioned pieces of land. And in fact, we heard from a wonderful, wonderful man named Brian Powers who owns this place.
I think Brian Flowers.
Flowers, excuse me. Brian Flowers. Sorry, Brian. He owns, it's called The Meadow?
Yep. That's how I remember his name is Flowers. Yep. He calls it The Meadow, and it's a beautiful space in Washington.
Yes. And you get to be buried without toxic embalming. Your plain body will go into the earth and naturally decompose, nourish the earth. And actually, you will get to choose a couple different kind of indigenous wildlife to be, you know, that you're going to be nourishing.
Yeah, your loved ones can choose which ones. He said they did have cedar trees was on the menu to begin with. But because of that area, it was quickly becoming a dense cedar forest.
He's like, we can't have a cedar grove here.
Yeah.
So he gives them an option, but they're all, he actually had the land surveyed to see what indigenous wildlife was there. And so those bodies are there and they are helping to nourish, grow those plants.
Yeah. And it's quite beautiful to see the different wild grasses and flowers.
Yes. And another man we met that was involved with the green burial movement up there is Jeff Jorgensen, who owns Elemental Mortuary, which is a green burial mortuary. And he works with a wonderful team of people. And then we also have Undertaking LA down here, which they're connected with too, if you're looking for green burial options. But these people are looking to be environmentally sound, honoring the body, honoring the connection between us and the earth. And it's a really special thing, and it's going to help us in the future. It's very planet-friendly.
It's going to help us in the future, and what I realized at this conference that I didn't know is not only is that the direction things should go in, but we're really talking about a limited resource here, so yes, we like have we to said, find a sustainable,
there's
renewable
a finality,
way.
There's a finality to the industry as it is, so this is sort of the future. You know, everything in this conference was extremely progressive.
Yeah, so this was kind of like death to death as we know it could have been another secret theme, I think, yeah, of the weekend. And really cool woman at the end talked about she's completely spearheading Katrina Spade.
Katrina
is her name.
Spade.
She was awesome.
Katrina Spade was an architect. And so she used this sort of architect background to try and figure out a better way for humans to be decomposted.
And actually, she has figured
or
it out, and
me,
she calls it
recomposition.
Recomposition, recomposed.
Right.
And the idea is that our bodies, as we know them after death, decompose into soil and become mm-hmm. part of the earth, which was like, frankly, I was a little freaked out by it to think about, mm-hmm. You know, that to think in detail of that level of my own body decomposing. And they do it on body farms.
Oh, the body farms.
Oh, the body farms.
I know of a few. Because I went to school in Tennessee, I knew about the one at the University of Tennessee.
Can you say what a body farm is?
And so the one that Katrina worked at was at Western Carolina University. A body farm, and me and Kelly always joke, to avoid the farm.
Yeah.
But
Jill's always like... She'll have a near miss of something dangerous, which happens to Jill because she's a little too familiar with death.
Too
it seems to
death.
Always be calling her.
I'm accident prone.
She's, a little friendly with a grim reaper.
Yes.
Someone put her hand through a window.
Yeah.
She'll, when something like that happens, she'll text me, hashtag avoid the farm.
Right. Because I might be the kind of person who would donate my body to such a purpose. But what they do is they, all kinds of different students study how bodies decompose, you know, in open air and sort of different circumstances. So it's sort of like this big contained area outside, which they said is actually very beautiful. I believe them. And it's kind of weird.
Yeah, except for the rotting corpses.
Yes.
Jill.
Other than they're like, there's trees and there's birds and rotting corpses everywhere. So that's what a body farm is.
And they actually can figure out, we have an article about this on When You Die, actually, but they can figure out the time of death based on this. So this
yes.
is very important for forensic science.
It is.
Based on the gut bacteria, based on the decomposition,
soil.
The soil.
They can look at they said crime scene people can look at, like, they know what soil looks like when a decomposed body is on it and stuff. So it's a huge resource field. But Katrina's whole direction with it is how to, I'll use compost, you know, just as a, I know they're not going to like it, but so she wants to sort of speed up that composting process. And so she's looking at different ways to do that. And really what it comes down to, I think, is wood chips and oxygen.
That's all that's what appealed to me almost more than anything.
The simplicity of it.
It seems so natural. It's almost like that's how it was meant to be, because there's no weird chemical.
Right.
Or, you know, no mutated water with aquafation or whatever.
Yeah.
It just appealed to me, the simplicity of it.
Me too. And so she is looking at potentially, I think she's at a state university in Seattle.
And so she's doing a very limited study
with,
I think, 12 bodies, people that she has met. That she is, like, so grateful for beyond words. And
to sort of,
this is their last final gift to the universe, is to offer their body to help steer us in a new direction, to help educate us so that we have more options. And so she said she thinks it will be as short as 30 days that these bodies will decompose. And then you get, you get a square yard of soil on average, probably like a cubic square yard.
Which is actually a lot.
And
then you can
for me, it might be like half a cubic square yard because I'm small.
But then you can do what you wish. So you can use it as soil, and that's going to be.
You can plant flowers.
But you will be turned into soil. And that's important because that's a legal word.
I feel
word.
Like you just, that was a threat. You're looking in my eyes. You will be turned into
soil. I don't
soil.
Want Tanya calling anyway. Yeah, Tanya
I
was really.
Be so lucky.
Yeah, so I think it's really great. So then you can kind of use it, you know, however you wish.
Yeah.
So she's...
I mean, for me, I'm still... I was raised Buddhist, and I'm mm-hmm. still Buddhist. And the idea of the sky burial, where they hack up your limbs and throw them to the four corners. What? You morbid chick, you don't know about this?
Someone down there is going to get hit with a limb.
It's probably happened in Tibet. And the vultures eat you. This is what Caitlin said she wants for
hers. Yes, I've heard of the vulture picking, but I didn't hear of the... flinging of body limbs.
Flinging of body limbs. And the idea is that, you know, we believe in reincarnation. And the idea is that your former self, your mm-hmm. soul, may want to cling to the body. And so it's actually just to help us let go after death.
Mm-hmm.
So that's appealing to me.
You know who's in big favor of green burial? Everybody's favorite scientist, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah, he recently spoke, what would he want to do with his body after he dies? And he said, just put my body in the earth and let it...
Period.
Yes.
Clean and simple.
That's
so
right.
That was the ending note, and I thought it was very inspiring, this recomposting and the idea of growing a rose bush with actual soil, which is actually...
You could just keep the soil natural. Around, grow anything with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So... that was very sweet, and it was inspiring. She's really fighting a legal fight along with...
this girl's dedicating her life to the progress of this.
Yeah, it was very inspiring, and I thought it was a real note of hope that we ended on there, because there were a lot of moments where it was like, geez, really?
Especially after the legal talk, you know, and how far we need to go there.
There's a lot of struggles, but it was very inspiring, and I think we all kind of walked out, believe it or not, cheery.
Yes, we did. Even with our sort of hangovers of it, just because it's hard to talk about death all day, every day.
Yeah, and you know what? When the death doula is complaining that there's too much death talk, you're like, yeah, it's bad.
It was too much for even a one death doula LA. Yep.
So we actually had to just take off and have a little bit of death-free fun.
We
in
got
Seattle.
To tour the beautiful, beautiful city
it was
of
fabulous.
Seattle.
Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Jeff. We had good tour guides, and we were able to shake it off a little bit.
We were, and we're happy to be back home in LA and continue to network with all of these people who are, despite the legal battles, fighting for the future of our death care.
Absolutely. So bravo, and thank you to everyone there. The last shout out I want to give or point that I think we missed was Matt Ignacio.
Yes.
Spoke, and he is of Native American descent from a New Mexican tribe.
Yes.
I do not know how to say the name of this tribe, and I am not going to embarrass myself or
don't
anyone
try.
Else by trying.
They wouldn't appreciate you messing
I don't
it up,
think
you know?
That, yeah. So he gave a fascinating talk about how death is different.
The decolonization of death.
Yeah, the decolonization of death, and how for his community, death is really frequent. He said he was constantly being pulled out of school to go to a family member's funeral. And, mm-hmm. you know, the death rate, people do die younger in those communities. And there are many factors,
as
like
was
poverty and addiction.
By Angela Hennessy, yep. you know, marginalized communities, Hispanic communities, Black communities, Native American
yeah.
communities especially.
Yeah,
I would
there's
say.
More suicide. There's yeah. more, you know, and it's like really important to talk about. And Jill and I are actually both of
part,
some part small bit of Native
yeah,
of Cherokee.
Yeah, I know people get annoyed when you say that. They're like, oh, you're a little bit Cherokee. But actually, truthfully, both of us have grandparents that came off a reservation in Oklahoma and, you know, had to flee from the Dust Bowl. So that was a part of our heritage, too.
Yeah, so this was a particularly poignant point in the conference. And
it's a community that's not often mentioned. And we almost left it out. And I'm sorry for
that. And it's a community whose corpse our entire society is built on to some extent. I know that's
an extreme way to put it. That is a beautiful
image.
America is built on the corpse of the Native American community.
So it seemed really important to acknowledge also the sacredness and ceremony that they have surrounding death. And this sacredness and ceremony came into play in the conversation about green burial as well. Brian Flowers said, yes, like I've helped people dig their own, you know, dig a grave of their loved one.
I can see Brian out there with a shovel just at it.
Totally.
But families digging their own loved ones' graves.
He said the amount of bonding with these people he had never met. And he's like, there may have been a 12-pack of beer involved.
Yeah.
And it was all day.
If you're going to be digging a grave all day, there's going to be a 12-pack of beer.
If you and I are ever digging a grave together, which doesn't seem unlikely, I hope there's a 12-pack of beer. Anyway, the idea that ceremony is so important and talking about the Native American ceremonies, he didn't give away any of the details, but the importance of that sacredness and not losing it as the culture incorporates more into
so we all have, you know, these ceremonies, and that's a big part of it.
And thinking about for oneself, what kind of ceremony might I like to have? Thinking about ceremony around death and what you would like at the end of your life, and knowing full well that we had a lot of things that kind of stirred up what we thought we believed before the death salon. I always close this podcast by asking, what is one thing you wish for your own death? And so I pose that question to you now.
Which I do think about quite a bit. I hope for my own death that I can give my body back to something, whether it be a body farm or... I don't want a vulture. I don't really like birds very much, and I don't like the image of myself getting picked apart. But I would definitely love to give back to the earth and be green buried, you know. Or even be composted. I don't know. I'd love to contribute it to someone's garden or something. Maybe a local marijuana farmer will want my ashes.
That would be very you.
It would be. I don't want to die in a way that takes from the earth. So wow. I'm going to stick to the very green side of things.
That's great. Well, let's all make sure we write such things down. So that it's not just based on a podcast that we know. No vultures for Jill.
Yes. Well, as of now, I do own a BioCern. So if anything happens to me in the meantime, you guys can just grow me into a tree.
That's a good option, too. And thank you so much for joining and for keeping me company at the Death Salon.
We had a great time in Seattle.
We sure did. Thank you, Seattle.
And next year's Death Salon will be in Boston.
Woohoo! Hopefully we'll be there.
And I will be there.
Thank you for sharing your end-of-life wishes. And until then, Jill, avoid the farm.
Avoid the farm.
Hashtag avoid the farm. Thank you.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. WhenYouDie.org.